Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Grok Radio. The following broadcast is made possible by the friends and partners of CYI Worldwide Ministries and Grok Radio. And the views expressed in this program and by our guests may not necessarily reflect those of CYI Worldwide Ministries or its staff. And now, enjoy the show.
You stand on the shore of the ocean watching the tide come in. You sense the call of the sea beckoning to take you in further. You step forward little by little, not knowing what to expect, but expecting more. You keep going as the ocean calls you to enter in to deeper waters.
This is Nick Peters here with the Deeper Waters podcast. I hope everything's coming in correctly. We were having a little bit of technical difficulties. This month, April, happens to be Autism Awareness Month. And that is a month I take very seriously, seeing as I have Asperger's. And my wife has Asperger's. Now, I thought I could talk about our experience some, and I'll probably wear some today, but I mainly wanted to see if I could bring someone else on. And about a month or so before this came on, I found someone who contacted me through LinkedIn. He wrote a book called In the Belly of a Whale about his son named Joseph, who has Asperger's. And I believe I've got him online right now. His name's Jacob Alexander, and he's the author of a book, In the Belly of a Whale. So we're connecting. Jacob, is that you?
Yes, this is Jacob.
Hi there. Welcome to the Deeper Waters podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Now, this is normally an apologetics podcast, so some people might be wondering, well, what does this have to do with it? Part of this is that, Jacob, you and your family, you're a Christian family, right?
That is correct.
Yep. And so what this is doing is showing the power of Christianity in the life of the Asperger's and autism community. And I would hope also we can discuss maybe things like how Christians have responded and such, and things that happen in church that people like myself and your son might have a difficult time relating to and such. But let's talk. Tell us about yourself first.
Okay. I am basically normal. I mean, I guess I'm crazy like everybody else is, you know, in different ways, but I've never been diagnosed with Asperger, nor has my wife, nor has my daughter. So it was quite an awakening to have to deal with my son over the years, and I found it was like trying to learn a new language, like trying to learn French or German or something, you know. I still don't think I've mastered it that well.
Okay, well, tell us how we got to this point exactly. Like, you had your son, and if I'm correct, you had him a bit late for your age, right?
That is correct. My wife had completed her PhD, and she had already been teaching, she'd been teaching about 18 years in the public school system and in the university system before my son was born.
And so you go to the hospital. I think you had to have like a cesarean done.
And that is correct. It was around Christmas time. It was a very cold day, and I remember it like it was yesterday because, I live in Georgia, and we don't see snow that often. So I remember as we were going to the hospital in the early morning, snow began to fall, and it just seemed like, it seemed like a glorious day because, of the snow falling and the feeling of, a birth around Christmas time. And we were already celebrating, the birth of Christ, and our thoughts were you know, about the birth of Christ. So to us, it was a very special event. Plus, my wife and I, you know, were older parents, and we had always wanted a child, and it was just a very special event for us.
Mm-hmm. Now, also, before we go further, I'm going to tell everyone the call-in number. If you'd like to call and talk about autism and Asperger's, and maybe tell some of your own story as well, if you have it or you know someone who has, that number is 714-242-5180. Okay, so we're at the hospital. Joseph is born. And as far as you're concerned, everything seems pretty much normal for him, right?
Yeah, everything went, you know, other than the cesarean, you know, and the birth took a long time.
Yeah.
He had to wait, you know, over a day, about a day in this room that they had placed us in for new parents. And we waited, and the doctor, you know, was trying to deliver natural childbirth, but my wife's water had broken a day earlier, and everybody was concerned about this, you know, his birth, that something might happen that was dreadful. So we went ahead with a cesarean section. And I remember, you know, it was like yesterday. It was so cold. They kept the surgical room very cold. And I remember when they pulled my son, you know, sliced my wife's belly open, and they pulled my son from her belly. It seemed like, you know, steam was floating around the room, and it was just almost like a dream sequence.
And this was your firstborn child, right?
Yes, it was.
Okay. And I'm guessing then as soon as the child was born, I mean, you're happy to have him, he's there, and to you, there's no sign that he's got any disability or anything whatsoever like that.
There was none.
Yeah.
None at all.
Okay.
You know, as a matter of fact, he seemed, you know, a normal child, really, up until we enrolled him in a church school, in which my wife was a friend of the director, and they noticed in preschool that he was different than the other kids. He was far less coordinated and just seemed to not be able to socialize with the other kids. He had a problem, you know, keeping eye contact with the teacher, and there were problems like that were noticed, and really severe coordination problems. As a matter of fact, come to find out, not only did he have Asperger, but he had a motor function disorder, which was like similar to a mild cerebral palsy. In consequence, you know, he had to, through elementary and middle school, he was in speech therapy for many years, and he was in physical therapy for many years. So it was a long process for him to approach, you know, looking and acting and being normal, and this was outside of the fact that he had Asperger.
It could actually in some ways be symptomatic of the Asperger's. I had the exact same problem in many ways. I was in speech therapy and physical therapy, and for me it's rather amusing when I went to, was applying for Bible college, I went through voc rehab since I'm disabled, and they'd said, don't go into preaching, you will not be able to handle public speaking, which, take a look at where things are right now. And my own wife who has Asperger's, I noticed that, for instance, when we went on our honeymoon, I took her to a miniature golf course, and she had a hard time holding a golf club, and I had to help her with that some. And it's not because she's unintelligent or anything of that, it's just because somehow the mind works differently. And, of course, if anyone else out there has Asperger's and or knows someone who does, would like to call and clarify on this and give a comment, or if you're an authority on the topic also, and please cause and remember the number is 714-242-5180. And I noticed a lot of the signs you talk about, like bad coordination, can't socialize well, and doesn't really make eye contact. Had you been getting any hints of anything like this before preschool?
Well, I guess I was, you know, there were hints, yes, but I guess I was naive in that, you know, I'd never heard of Asperger. Taken context, you know, this was 20 plus years ago. And nobody that I knew of had heard of it. And as a matter of fact, when Alex, when my son entered, when Joseph entered, elementary school, none of the teachers heard of it. My wife had completed her PhD and had already spent, 10 years or more teaching special in the area of special education. She had never heard of it. So, it was sort of a rare condition in our area where we live at this time. Nobody had really even heard of it.
So, you said this was a few years ago. Can you tell us exactly what year Joseph was born?
Joseph was born in 1987.
1987. So when he was in preschool, this would be like the early 90s or so.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, you're in preschool and you find out, hey, there's something wrong, so you start talk to some specialists and such, but it's a long time before you really get a diagnosis that's accurate, right?
That's correct. We went to at least a dozen or more doctors, and nobody really gave us any help of any consequence that seemed to do anything to help his condition. And finally, it was just by, God's providence that my wife, at this time, she was teaching gifted children. She was in the gifted department at school, and she happened to, and it was then, she's taught in a lot of areas of education in quite a few different states, in New York and Tennessee and Georgia. And in this particular area where she was teaching, it was gifted children, and this was a very affluent area. So these were, heavily professional-type parents.
Mm-hmm.
And she happened to have a student who was one of her brighter students. Today he is a rabbi in New York City. And she happened to have the student, and he was talking about his father, who was a doctor at the Marcus Center in Atlanta. And so my wife and his father began to talk, and right off, they hit it off. They really developed a friendship, with each other. And we took my son in for a diagnosis at the Marcus Center, and this particular doctor, developmental pediatrician in Atlanta, and by the way, today he teaches at Emory University, also along with his medical practice. But he was the one to diagnose my son and start treatment. And, even in the beginning, the school system in the area didn't believe very much what he was telling them to do. And so they resisted helping my son at all. And as I write in the book, my son was placed in special education. And in his class, he was the only one that had his type of autism. And I write in the book, in his class, there was a blind person, and there was quite a few other types of disorders, a blind, a couple of deformed, handicapped people, that had a missing arm or a deformed leg or something like that. And there were other, and they may have already also had other types of medical conditions. But he was the only one in his class that was diagnosed with his condition. And I think the school system at the time felt that they wanted to lump everybody, no matter what their condition was, in one class and handle them that way, because it was the most economical way to do it. And really, it just felt like they didn't want to deal with a handicap at the time.
Okay. Now, what year was it that he was diagnosed with Asperger's?
He was diagnosed, it was like 1991, either end of 91 or early 92.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So
maybe it was 92, actually.
You're kind of fortunate there. It was very early. I wasn't diagnosed until I was in fifth grade, and my wife wasn't diagnosed until she was in 11th grade. So it's kind of odd for a family they live a long time without knowing why their kid's different. But before we go on, maybe we should...
First grade, actually. So I don't know. It's 92, probably end of 92, somewhere in that area.
Okay. So before we go on talking about this, we've been saying this term over and over, but perhaps you should explain what it is for us. What do you mean by the term Asperger's?
Well, it's a mild form of autism that, you know, the person is usually capable. He's a very capable person. And in some cases, you know, not all cases, in some cases, people with Asperger, you know, can have one area that they really are extremely bright in that particular area. Matter of fact, in some cases, they found that they may even be a genius in that particular type of area. And it's by Asperger, you know, they have a lot of the conditions you'll find in regular autism, except that they can be productive members of society. They can be taught how to communicate. They can be taught how to make their lives in regular society. It's not a condition where they're confined or should be put in a mental institution or something like that. It's not a severe condition. It's very mild.
Okay, well, you said it was a mild form of autism. It has some of the characteristics. Could you tell us what some of those characteristics are that make things a little bit more difficult?
Are an inability to socialize.
Yeah.
That, to me, is the biggest problem. And a lot of people with Asperger, like you and my son, I found in my research that they do have a physical condition, usually, that goes along with the Asperger. More than half of the people that are diagnosed are like you and my son. They can be productive members of society, and in some cases, not every case, in some cases, they can also be specifically bright in one particular area, even though they may be deficient in the areas that involve social aspects.
Yeah. Now, you said Joseph was in special education, but from what I've gathered from you, Brooke, you would say he is exceptionally bright.
Well, yes. I think he's exceptionally bright. And, you know, to me, it always seemed like he was the brightest person I ever met. And at times, because of his social disability, it seemed like he could be the brightest and, you know, the least brightest person I ever met. Because the social inability can cause problems that normal people couldn't even understand. For instance, most people that have autism don't understand tact. And because tact is, you know, it requires that you not speak the truth all the time. And so Joseph really, it took him years to kind of tone down, and still he does not even do it that well today, tone down his need tell the truth about the way he feels and the way he perceives something. And I think, you know, that's gotten him in trouble at certain times.
Yeah, we've had that go on here a few times, that Aaron and I can be saying, well, we're just telling the truth. And it's like, well, now's not a good time to tell the truth. It doesn't mean you lie, but it means you don't give the whole truth.
Yeah. And I think that's very hard for people to understand about people that have Asperger or people with autism. When you tell the truth all the time, I mean, it can really, just in his elementary school, I think several of his teachers were vindictive, and they were really hateful towards him because he told the truth a couple of times, and in he has this mind that he is he's able to, in subjects that are his particular area of interest, he finds out everything. He knows every facet. He knows every detail. He knows detail far past what any elementary school teacher would study. And, you know, and any teacher is like professionals of any type. They don't want somebody else to, you know, tell them. And it's some people. Of course, there are great people. There are great teachers who, you know, can ignore it. But on the other hand, there are people that if you give them information and they think that you know more than they do when they're talking about a subject, they don't take it very well. And I think you had that happen a couple of occasions.
Okay. Well, this is we're talking with Jacob Alexander on the Deeper Waters podcast, author of In the Belly of a Whale. We're talking about his son with Asperger's. We're going to take a quick little break. When we come back, we're going to be asking some more questions. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. I'm Nick Peters, and we'll be back after this break.
Hey, this is Minister.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you Grok?
Hey, this is Minister Grok. Thanks for listening. Although Grok Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gift if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at CYIWorldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
I'm Nick Peters. This is the Deeper Waters Podcast. We are back. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. We are talking with Jacob Alexander, author of In the Belly of a Whale, about his son Joseph, who has Asperger's. Now, you said that he was exceptionally bright. I know you can give reasons why you think so, and I agree with you today, but what were some evidences that he was exceptionally bright back in the first grade when he was in special education?
Well, my wife is also, along with teaching, she does professional consulting work on testing. Mm-hmm. And she's done that with several, she's been involved with several psychologists. He was tested using several different, testing systems. One was to get in the gifted program.
Mm-hmm.
Get an entrance into the gifted program. So he was tested for giftedness using the gifted testing system that they have in the Georgia public school system, and he scored at the 99th percentile in creatively gifted.
Yeah.
So, the testing also showed that. The school system really wanted to segregate him, just put him in a special education class and just forget him and not pay any attention to him. But once he had tested as gifted and there was proof that he actually, was a bright kid. Hmm. So we were able to use the testing to further help him later in his life.
Mm-hmm.
And when the school system tried to place him in, special education full-time, they wanted to cut off any type of speech therapy. They wanted to cut off any type of physical therapy in the school system or cut down his hours. We protested. My wife collected boxes of evidence to show his brightness in the class. His problem was that, because of his disability, his motor function disorder, he could not write very fast, and his writing was not, it required a lot of work, to be legible. It took him a lot of time to make it legible. It took him time to do it. But given the time, given an extra amount of time, and he could do the work. And not only could he do the work, he could do it at the highest level possible.
Mm-hmm.
And he did extremely well once he was in gifted. He was actually placed in the after they wouldn't allow him to be placed in gifted to begin with, even though he had tested in gifted.
Mm-hmm.
He had to hire an attorney and take this file of legal action against the public school system
mm-hmm.
to allow him to attend gifted classes, to mm-hmm. allow him to be given speech therapy, to allow him to be given physical therapy. While we did this, my wife collected evidence over, from the time he was in the first grade to the time he was in the fourth grade, when this action happened. And we presented seven boxes of papers, thousands of papers, in all different types of subjects, which showed the content and showed that he grasped what they were doing in the class well.
Mm-hmm.
Just that he could not really do a good job of completing the class.
Yeah.
So after going through the action, he was allowed, after this, he was allowed extra time to do the work. He was allowed extra time for testing. Once he was allowed this extra time, he really started to blossom.
Mm-hmm.
He really started to do well in class. And keep in mind, he was going to special education classes, but he was also spending the majority of his time in gifted classes. And he was doing extremely well in gifted. They would not let go of his special education, although they did reduce the hours after the legal action, which eventually became a mediation with the school system. After that action, they allowed more physical therapy at times. They allowed more speech time. And after his physical therapy, with physical therapy, his motor functions began to improve. And he began to write faster. He began to write more legible. And the more time he spent in his therapy classes, the better he got at doing his work in the school system.
Well, I can tell my family, if however many of them are listening right now, my parents had a funeral to go to, but I'm sure they're just totally unaware of any problem over here with my handwriting. I can relate to that. Usually, I was told I should be a doctor because I write like one. But I'm curious also about the speech therapy. Can you tell me about why he needed speech therapy exactly? What was communication like for him verbally?
Well, he stammered with his words. Couldn't say them very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
He needed to enunciate his words better. He learned that through techniques in speech therapy. And over time, he learned to communicate better over time. And with
mm-hmm.
physical therapy, he learned to write better. And even today, he's like you. His writing is still not that, he still doesn't write that legibly. He doesn't, he still is slow. It takes him 3 to 4 times longer to perform an assignment than the normal person. But the good thing is that he is amazing with technology. He set up our computer systems. He has set up our computer systems. Anything you ask him about programming are with computers, he knows how to do it. And as a matter of fact, he in our family, he's kind of the resident person to ask about anything with technology, so he really knows it well. And we told the school system that it wouldn't matter whether he could write fast or slow, because technology would eventually take over. But at this time, this was the mid-90s, and people didn't have computers. There were computers, but they were not like they are today where everybody had one. They were expensive. Because I remember the first computer that we bought him, you know, it's about $3,000 is what it cost. That was a lot of money back then. Computers today are much cheaper. They're much easier to use, and everything has improved with technology. Back then, when he was in school, you know, technology was just beginning. It was just about to start to go to the level where it is now. So, you know, we tried to convince the school system that technology would improve his situation, but for years they wouldn't believe us. Or maybe it wasn't the fact they wouldn't believe us. They just would not. They would not allow, you know, him to have extra time until he could, you know, get the technology. So it took a while to convince the school system that technology would be the answer to his problems.
As far as computer skill, maybe I should try and get in touch with him some. But you talked about the physical therapy also. Now, I know when I was in school, gym class was a curse. So is that the kind of thing that Joseph went to? How did he handle physical therapy, and how would he have handled a gym class, or how did he handle one?
Well, I think he felt the same way you did about it. Really, up until high school, he always felt that way.
Mm.
But the good thing about Joseph is that he has his gifts are logic.
Yeah.
He really has a gift for logic. He can figure things out, you know, most things out well.
And yeah.
He's the most amazingly logical person I've ever met.
Mm.
And he writes really well. What I mean is that I've written a book, but had he written it, it would be perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It would not be like my book. My book is like a normal person's book. It's not a book that somebody that has a special ability writes. When he writes something, it is so amazing to just sit and think about what he's written, because it's just amazing. He has a tremendous ability in writing. And he has a tremendous ability in logic and using technology. So that is why his life is in a good position today.
Yeah. Joseph also, from what I gather from your book, he had pretty much everything against him, but you made it a point to instill in him, or maybe even had this in him some on his own, to never give up. Is that right?
Well, I think that was as much my wife as it was Joseph, because she, you know, I would say this. When we went to mediation, for instance, the school system hired a specialist to go up against us in mediation, an education specialist in the area of special education. My wife started reading once we found out that my son had been diagnosed with Asperger. She started reading about autism and Asperger. And over a period of years, 3 or 4 years, and she started consulting with our doctor about my son. So over a period of years, she really became an expert, I think, in autism. And by the time we went to mediation, she knew what to say. She knew how to say it. She basically led the case that got, and she knew what to ask for, which is more important than anything. She knew what to to what accommodations to get for my son, because, you know, she had already spent at this point 20 years teaching, and she had a PhD that she had been involved in quite a bit of research doing her PhD in the area of education. So we were really lucky, and it was my wife that drove everything. And even today, Joseph, well, just like today, he has to have a pep talk for about 30 minutes before he gets started doing anything. She gives him a pep talk, and it usually gets him going, and she knows just what to say to him. I'm not as good at that as she is. She just has developed a way to handle him that is amazing. I've never seen it before. I don't even, of the people that were, that we later found out that were like my son, and he had a couple of friends like yourself and like him that had his condition, and the two of you are two of the few people I've ever even heard of with his condition that became successful. And that's why I thought his story was amazing. I hear of a lot of people being diagnosed sort of after the fact, when they're older. You know, this person has Asperger, that person has Asperger. You know, I always wonder about those diagnoses because, you know, I watched him go through all that physical therapy. I watched him with all the problems he had trying to communicate socially. And I just wonder if people realize what, you know, what it was like for people like the two of you.
Yeah. I suspect a lot of people don't really have a clue about that, but I also suspect there are several more people out there with Asperger's who are being very, very successful. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more of them coming out. Now, you mentioned him having friends who have Asperger's as well. When he was in school, did he have any other friends? Did he have a hard time making friends? How did the other kids treat him?
Well, I would say that, you know, in elementary school, especially, in middle school, he was treated horribly.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was made fun of. He, not just by the students, but the teachers gave him a hard time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a horrible mess. I mean, we were as upset with some of the teachers as we were with some of the students. They just did not want to recognize any type of, you know, mental disorder. And the more physical therapy that he took, the more speech therapy he took, he started to look better. He started to move better. And the more that happened, the more bias, the more angst that these people felt toward him. And at times, the teachers and the students made his life miserable. And really, that really happened, you know, up until high school. And he had one good friend. Well, he actually had two good friends. One was like one of the people that he was friends with had Asperger also. And his parents were unlike us in that they were very wealthy. They sent him to private schools. They, you know, had the best of the best. And we are a family that, you know, is not a wealthy. You know, although my wife has a PhD, she's a teacher, and teachers do not make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
And so we, and I'm in a normal job myself, and I've also been a teacher, and I've not had large amounts of money over time. This particular family is very wealthy, and this his friend that also had his condition, is a janitor now. So, but there's quite a few other people that that had. They were very bright. One person my wife talked about quite a bit that was a genius with computers. The school system, he did a couple of things that the teachers didn't like, and they booted him out. And there were quite a few others that quit in high school because the school system was pretty rough on them, and they didn't have people like my wife who was versed on what to do and was willing to use the legal system and use whatever funds we could save to pay attorneys and whatever it took, you know, to make a better life for our son who had a handicap. So I think most people were not like us, and the ones we saw did not turn out like he did. It takes an awful lot of time. It takes an awful lot of money to either takes a lot of a person with expertise, like my wife, that can do it, or it takes a lot of money. And in the case, one of his best friends, the family had a lot of money, but they didn't have the expertise of my wife. And I just don't think, you know, he turned out as well.
Okay.
As my son did. But I'm just saying that in my son's case, I don't see too many people like you and my son although there may be many. There may be, you know, thousands or whatever, people just like my son. There's, I can tell you this, there's nobody in law school where he is now that also is diagnosed and has, you know, evidence to prove that they have Asperger.
Okay, well, we are coming up on our second break right now with Jacob Alexander, author of the book In the Belly of the Whale, talking about his son Joseph, who's been diagnosed with Asperger's. Our call in number is 714-242-5180. We will be back after this break.
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grock as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told, every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out CYIWorldwide.com.
Okay, we're back with Jacob Alexander, author of the book In the Belly of a Whale, talking about his son Joseph, who has Asperger's. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180. Now, you were just talking about how he responded to other students and teachers, and I'm going to tell you, my wife has a passion against bullies. I'm guessing Joseph, by your words, encountered a lot of them. So what would you tell him would be the best way for him to have handled those bullies?
Well, you know, Joseph just ignored it, and my wife pretty much just... Joseph is one reason that you would never guess from talking with me. Joseph is very mild-mannered.
Mm-hmm.
He's very humble. He would never tell you that he's bright. He would never brag about it, or he would never do anything like that. I'm saying that because the point is he's very mild-mannered. He just ignored it. Some people treated him horribly, but he just took it and turned the other cheek and he moved on. He didn't dwell on it. He didn't, you know, do anything about it. He just took it and kept going. And he took so much abuse. I would never have taken that abuse. Matter of fact, I would tell him that I was bullied when I was a kid. And I remember in school, and I didn't take it. I remember when I told this story quite a few times. I remember this in the fifth grade, a kid was bullying me, and I turned around in the middle of class because I figured it was the best place, you know, not to get killed because he was bigger than I was. I turned around and hit him as hard as I could in the face because he was bullying me so badly. But Joseph never did anything like that. Joseph was always mild-mannered. He would always kind of just back down and take it. He didn't try to cause any disruption in any way. He was just very mild-mannered.
Okay, now you talk about turning the other cheek, so let's get into that a little bit. When did Christianity really become a part of Joseph's life?
Well, you know, there were a lot of problems when he was a kid. Personally, we would have arguments, and I think I write in the book that there was one point where he did not, because I didn't understand Asperger, and I just thought that he was trying to be, you know, he didn't respect me. I thought he was just not showing respect. So at one point, even myself, you know, there were times when I was not in his corner like I should have been. Mm. And I remember one point he didn't speak to me for a year. Can you imagine a kid not saying a word to you for a year?
No.
That's pretty hard for any parent to understand.
Mm.
But in high school, and I would say about the 10th grade, my wife, and I write this in the book, we had marital troubles because our kid was handicapped, and he was hard to deal with in a lot of ways. And so we started dedicating our life, you know, to Christ, and we started studying more the Bible more, and we started, you know, looking at how our marriage, you know, should be as the Bible says it should be. We spent a lot of time doing that, and Joseph kind of took our cue. He started reading the Bible more, and really by the 10th grade, we noticed something that was unusual. At least I thought it was unusual. And he didn't even want me to say this. He told me not to say it. But he began to show almost a photographic memory for verses in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd never seen anything like it. My job at the time was dealing with church boards, meeting with ministers almost every day, and discussing, you know, different topics with ministers and stuff. I never met anybody that could do what he did. But even more than that, you know, by this time he'd been in years of physical therapy, years in speech therapy. He could enunciate what the Bible passage meant better than anybody I'd ever met.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought it was an amazing ability. I have, and to this day, I've never met anybody that could do that as well as he could. When he talks about a Bible passage, when he goes, you know, through it, he can tell you things that maybe maybe the characters in the Bible, maybe what Luke was thinking at the time. He can sort of be like an empath, and he can put himself in the way that Luke was thinking about a specific, you know, topic that's written in the Bible. And it's amazing. I've never met anybody that could do it.
Well, you talk about going to churches and such, and we've talked a little bit about how Aspies have a hard time with social interaction. How was church for Joseph?
Well, church was the one refuge for him. People treated him well in church. Everybody that I know of in church respected him. They treated him well. He was happy there. He was very happy going to church. And, you know, when he was 16, our pastor, we had a new pastor. Initially there was another pastor before this pastor. But he started discussing things in church with the pastor. Then a few years, this pastor that he was discussing with left. A new pastor that came, and this pastor had retired as a lawyer. He had gone to Emory Law School, and he'd been a lawyer for many years before he became a minister. So after church one day, I think my son and the minister were talking. He was discussing a topic with the minister, and the minister kind of noticed what we had noticed. He noticed that Joseph had an amazing ability understanding the Bible. So they started meeting regularly. And it seemed to me that they would discuss the Bible for hours and hours and hours on end. And it was, you know, it was an amazing, church was an amazing gift for Joseph, because it was the one place that was a refuge for him. It was the one place that he could feel at home. It was the one place that he could feel safe.
My wife has said the same thing about a church she attended, especially back in Virginia Beach, called Spring Branch. And it was just the place where she could go to where everything was made right. And me, when I was growing up in church, I expected to be safe. Sometimes it wasn't, but I know I really liked that. The church would often give me a chance to teach and preach, and that was what I was at home doing. It's that place. I'm not, maybe Joseph's like this, but he can be, is Joseph the same way that maybe he can be nervous in many cases, but as soon as he starts doing the thing that he loves, he's just in the zone, and everything is made right for him.
Well, the thing about Joseph and one of his amazing abilities, the things that he is in the zone about, he knows, and he knows it so well. I mean, once he starts talking, I've seen him talk for 8 hours at a time on a subject. And I mean, his mother would tell you this. He won't stop talking. If it's a subject he knows something about, he knows about everything about it. He knows every piece, every nook, every cranny, everything that has to do with that subject. It's a subject of his interest. And he will talk endlessly.
Now, you've spoken a lot about the intellectual side here, which is something I really enjoy the most. But from what I gather from your book, when Joseph became a Christian, the behavioral side changed as well.
Yeah, his behavior, our relationship changed. But one thing is, I think that I began to examine myself and to realize that Joseph's condition was a condition that his mind was different, and it was never going to change. And there's no way you can make it change.
Mm-hmm.
It's just impossible to, I mean, it's like, you know, it's like if a person, I don't know, if a person's blind. I mean, they're blind. And you can't, like, make them see because you want them to see. That's just the way they are. And I think Asperger is, the brain works differently.
Yeah.
And I think research has shown that the brain works differently. And there's no way that's going to change. So you have to learn how to deal with that. And you have to learn how to communicate with that person. And I began to realize that. It took me many years. It took me a long time to understand that. My wife grasped that many years before I did. And she was the one that kind of led the whole, the whole process with Joseph, and probably is the one that is responsible for where he is today. And I really did not learn until he became a Christian, and I decided that I was going to act in a Christian manner towards him. I don't think our life changed until that point, and that was in his high school years.
Okay. Well, give us some examples of how his behavior changed when he became a Christian.
Well, I think he became more patient.
Mm-hmm.
He became more willing to understand. He, he was less susceptible of tuning you out. He was less susceptible of having any type of meltdown at all.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I can't even remember the last time he's had any type of long anger bouts at all in many, many, many years. And that seemed to dissipate when he became a Christian.
Mm-hmm. Now, I'm guessing that he became a Christian after a story I'd like you to tell us about from your book. It's a rather amusing story, but I'm sure it wasn't at the time, but he once seemed to really embarrass his sister, didn't he?
Well, I write about that because, I think her life was miserable. I mean, people don't realize, and she today, I think, does not understand him totally. And she, why should she? I mean, she was a child, too. Why is it, and I think she felt, why was it her responsibility to understand him? And why did she have to put up with some of his, the way he approached things, like, he wanted to be quiet, and she may have a friend over, and they were talking loud, or they were giggling, or something like that, and he would say something about it and embarrass her, or and the case I write about is her birthday party, her sweet 16 birthday party, which is very important to her, and he embarrassed her terribly during that event. And it scarred her and really kind of caused a bigger rift in their relationship. And I think that, she thought, as most children think, why was she put in this prison? Why did she have to deal with him acting the way that he acted at times? And I think it was very hard on her. I'm very sympathetic to her being in the situation that she was in. And, I tell about it in the book, that it was, she was upset a lot of times, and her life was miserable having to deal with him at various times throughout her life.
Could you tell us what happened at this event exactly might give us, my listeners, a peek into the kind of thing you're talking about.
Well, my wife and I allowed her to have a party, a themed party on her birthday, and she invited a lot of her friends over, and they were downstairs, and she was playing music, and she is the type of person that she doesn't want to be embarrassed, and her friends are really important to her, and she is just doesn't, embarrassment really is one of the worst things you can do to her, and so she was talking to her friends, they were playing the music, and, you know, they were getting friendly, having fun, laughing. It was a great party, and everything was going well. Well, he hears it, he comes to the top of the stairs, and he starts shouting and, you know, turn that music down. You know, you're interrupting me, you're causing me to get upset because the music's too loud, and the girls are giggling, and that's so irritating, and he did things like that that it embarrassed her to no end, and she was very upset about it, and, you know, that was the incident that I wrote about in the book, and it was an important incident because she, Ray, and some of her friends, I don't know if other teenagers feel this way, but her 16th birthday was, it was an important event to her.
Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing at the time Joseph didn't even have any concept he'd done something he shouldn't have.
He did not. He really did not.
Yeah.
You know, he did not think, and that was just, he didn't think that he was doing. He just thought the music was loud, and it shouldn't be that loud. And he just, and it was his home, and you know, his place where he was to, he felt like he was able to be in a safe place, and he just felt like people shouldn't invade it.
Yeah.
And so that's just the way he felt about it.
Now, fortunately, though, in your book, it looks like the story does end happily, but he and his sister are on very good terms today.
They're on very good terms today. They talk, they congratulate each other on anything that they both do well, and they seem to get along famously.
And is this his only ever sibling?
Yes.
Okay.
It's his only other sibling. So, you know, they were together, and she endured a lot, you know, through his life. And at times, you know, she became very outgoing and very, you know, friendly. She had lots of friends. I mean, and it was kind of interesting to see her, you know, in contrast to him, because she had friends, so many friends, just hundreds, something he could never do. And even when he tried to make a friend, a lot of times it just didn't turn out well. And it was a disaster. And she had hundreds of friends. She was popular, very popular in school. She became a cheerleader in school, and I think she won the award she went to a public high school that was a fairly highly ranked high school, and she won the award for the best academic cheerleader for all 4 years of high school. So she was popular, and she was really smart also.
Okay. Well, we're going to take another quick break here. When we're back, we're going to continue talking about Joseph here. Our call-in number is 714-242-5180, and we will be back after this.
Are you tired of the same old corporate Christian music on the radio? Check out Music Surge on Grok Radio, playing Christian music that doesn't suck. Download episodes now at cyiworldwide.com. Hey, this is Minister Grok. Thanks for listening. Although Grok Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gift if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at cyiworldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
And we are back here, and since we just played a donation thing, I'd like to remind everyone that what we do here is supported by people like you, regular listeners, who are willing to give a little bit. You can give to CYI, and you can also give to Deeper Waters. For those who want to do that, you can go to deeperwaters.wordpress.com and click the Donate tab. That's my own blog there. Or you can go to Tektonics, TektonicS.org, my ministry partner's page, J.P. Holding, his page, and make a donation and say it's for Deeper Waters, and he will make sure it gets to me. Right now we're talking with Jacob Alexander, author of In the Belly of Aware, and you're just talking about Joseph, your son who has Asperger's, with his sister. And this kind of gets me into an area that I was kind of surprised wasn't mentioned in the book, and maybe this can be discussed later on in college, but as a married man, I kind of wonder how other people on the spectrum respond. And I know sometimes people on the spectrum do get married. Sometimes they marry other athletes, sometimes they don't. But how has Joseph been with in that area? Has he ever had any interest there, or has it been difficult for him, or anything like that?
Well, to be honest with you, we have not discussed it at length. He's just really not talked about it very much with me. He's tried to, you know, beat girls. He's got in groups where he could talk to them and become friendly with them. And, you know, like I say, he goes to law school, and there are no Aspies in his legal class.
Yeah.
And he doesn't know any in his law school. And, frankly, he's decided that he wants to devote his full time to trying to get a law degree, and it takes most of his time to do that. And he just figures at this point he doesn't have enough time to, you know, get involved in a relationship and also do well in his law studies, because he spent a lot of time, you know, trying to prepare for his classes and all the writing and reading he has to do. He has to read hundreds of pages a week. He has to write, you know, hundreds of pages per week also, so it just doesn't feel he has time to do that. He is open. He talks to lots of females. He tries to be friendly. I guess at this point, just no one has, you know, reciprocated the interest in him that he has in them.
Yeah. Yeah, and chances are for me, it might not have happened if I hadn't had a really good friend who kind of played matchmaker for us, and chances are there is a possibility that our story could be on Truth Be Told later on this month. So I'm not really going to go into it there. It was just something I was curious about. But since we're talking about college some, I understand college, he really did begin to make a lot of friends there.
He did. And, you know, he had lots of girls who were friends in college. I mean, he had lots of female friends in college. When he went to college, he finally got the support that he needed, in that the college allowed him, you know, double time to complete his test. They gave him a note taker that helped take notes for him, because, you know, he couldn't write very well and follow the lecture and everything in class.
Oh, yeah.
Once he had the note taker, and once he had the extra time, he started to show a true genius. And I remember when he, first semester, you know, he made Dean's List the very first semester he was in college. And one of the courses was physics. Very difficult class. And, you know, he made top grade in his physics class. And I just thought that was amazing. And he went on through college to do well. And a friend, I think, invited him to go to the Wesley Association. And people within the Wesley Association, you know, saw that he had amazing ability with the Bible and with Scripture. And so once they saw that, sort of, you know, his friendships with lots of other people grew. As a matter of fact, he eventually developed a roommate in college who was also in Wesley. And there were a lot of people in Wesley who were devoted to it, and they were devoted Christians. And so I remember we went to one dinner, which I talk about in the book, and some of the people in Wesley had had dreadful life experiences. I mean, they had been involved in drugs, and there had been lots of stuff that had gone on badly. And they openly talked about it and what had led them to Christ. In a dinner that we went to, and a lot of the people had lived a pretty interesting life experience already. And the more that they realized the talents that Joseph had in the area of the Bible, the better his friendship seemed to get. And eventually, he was elected as president of the Wesley Association. Mm-hmm. So a lot of colleges. This might not be a big deal, but there were probably 300 to 400 members in the association, and these were people. I was in the Wesley Association in college also, and I don't remember people devoted to Christ like these people were. I mean, they lived and breathed and read and studied the Bible many hours each day, and they met in Bible studies. 2 or 3 hours a day, and eventually he got an apartment with a couple other Wesley members, and they taught and studied and researched the Bible, and it was as much a part of his college as his regular studies were, Bible research. So it was an amazing experience for him because of the Wesley Association. He did extremely well in college, and when he was elected president of the Wesley Association, there's 300 to 400 members in this particular association, and they were very active, a lot of them. Before a lot of the meetings, he would give, the speech about, what had went on, what they were doing in a particular, at a particular event and time and what they had planned. And then he was involved in planning and planning missions and procuring the funds and getting donations for the missions and stuff. And it was a pretty big activity. And you're talking about a guy who had spent 6 years in physics and speech therapy that's able to get up before a crowd of 200 or 300 people and talk. And not only that, he would meet with business people all over the state, to get donations and talk to them. And he would discuss the Bible with them, and even on Facebook, really through his high school years, which I thought was amazing. He had thousands. He started writing, which he doesn't do it now because he doesn't have time. He started writing his thoughts about the Bible, and sort of a Bible commentary on Facebook, and he had thousands of followers. At the time, Facebook was kind of just starting, when this was happening. And I just thought it was amazing. Someone is able to develop thousands of people that want to listen to what he writes about the Bible. And, for him, the Wesley situation and the friendships that he developed in college, it enhanced his life. It made his life different. And it shows what God can do when he enters your life. It could change your life. And I think for Joseph, that's what happened. His life was changed because of God. And, when he met with all his friendships in the Wesley Association.
Now, when he was in college, was he far away from you all, or did he stick close to home?
Yeah, that's another thing. I mean, let me tell you, when he was in college, my wife, let me just put this in context. a year before college, we had another legal proceeding in which the school system was trying to put him in a self-contained class. They were still not wanting to let him have any special, even though we had won special events, special considerations for him in elementary and middle school. When he got into high school, they wanted to just throw him in the trash. They wanted to forget about him. So we had to really start another proceeding in high school, keep him from, you know, having being bused. First of all, he would have to be bused an hour away from our house to this special school that they were making for handicapped individuals in the district. They were going to form a special school, which would require him to be bused an hour away. He would have had to get up at like 5 or 5:30 a.m. just to catch the bus to get to this particular, you know, school that they were going to bust him to. And they were trying to push him, and he would have, they suspended him from his gifted classes. He loved the people in gifted because he liked listening to people who were on his level, you know, as far as the way their knowledge worked in a specific area. A lot of the classes he took in the gifted classes, he really enjoyed, and he was able to think about them on a high level. And so, anyhow, they suspended his gifted classes in high school, and they tried to put him in a special school again. So we had to go through another proceeding from that being happening, and, you know, they basically threatened to send him to this school or expel him from school. So you're talking about only a year, maybe 2 years earlier. I mean, he had to deal with that before he went to college. So, mm-hmm. I mean, this is what he went through in high school. And then he goes to college, and he's a Dean's List student. You know, his professor, you should see what they have written about him. He's one of the brightest minds they've ever come, you know, they've ever met. One of the brightest minds they've ever had the pleasure of knowing. And then in high school, they were about to kick him out, a regular public school.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to a university where you have bright minds. The professors say that, look, this kid is bright, and he has an amazing mind. I just thought it was an amazing, you know, contrast between the public school system that he'd been in just a few years earlier, and then he goes to college and becomes a Dean's List student.
So when he was in college, was he far away from home, or was he close by?
Oh, yeah, that was the original question. I'm sorry, my wife is giving me that look because I got off point here. But anyhow, let me get back on point. He was a long way from home, and that sort of leads to why some part of the reason why I said all I said earlier. We did not expect him to make it. I mean,
yeah.
We thought it'd be hard, but instead mm-hmm. he flourished, and he was about 200 to 300 miles away from our house.
Yeah.
Saw him maybe once or twice a month, so. I mean, once he got settled, we would visit him once or twice a month. But he was able to make it on his own in college by himself, and eventually, through the power of Skype, you know, my wife talking to him each day, he did really well. I mean, and he thrived. And
yeah.
It was great. It was a great experience for us, and it was a great experience for him. He did well in college, and he thrived on his own.
Yeah, for a time I was in seminary, which is about 200 or 300 miles away from my folks then, which actually when I met my wife at the time, she was outside the Atlanta area, so she was also 200 to 300 miles away, so that made things interesting. And I know I lived with a roommate for a while, and he actually called into a program a couple of weeks ago to talk with Greg Coker. And he and I are still really, really good friends to this day. But what was it like for Joseph with his roommate and with living away from UR? I mean, what kind of adjustments do you have to make and such? Things like that.
Well, thanks to the power of Skype, he's still friends with a lot of people in the Wesley Association. His roommate, who went to dental school in mm-hmm. the University of Texas after college, you know, he still communicates with today. And they talk, you know, occasionally a couple times a month on the phone, and they send each other messages through emails, and I think they may even talk occasionally on Skype. So he's still friends with that particular, his roommate today, which, you know, for us was amazing
mm-hmm.
because he really only had one good friend his whole life until he was in college.
Mm-hmm.
And people understand, it's really very hard for people who have Asperger because of the social problems that they encounter with the disorder. And, you know, what happened to him in college was amazing for us. You know, we were amazingly happy. And the main thing is he became amazingly happy.
Mm-hmm. Now, with what we've been talking about here, you've spoken so many times about Skype. I'm wondering if Joseph is the same way that I and I think others are, that for us, it is much easier to communicate when we get in front of that computer screen than it is when we're face-to-face.
Well, I think that's true. I think mm-hmm. that's very true. My wife and Joseph, they Skype probably at minimum 1 to 2 hours every day. So
mm-hmm.
I think it's an invaluable tool for
yep.
Someone like yourself and like Joseph.
Well, let's give an example here. Suppose that you and your wife and Joseph had all went to a party and such, and there were several people there. Could you describe what you all would be doing and how that would be different from what Joseph would be doing that would kind of bring out how Asperger's affects someone in that social situation?
Well, to be honest with you, it'd be hard for me to do that because I've never been to a party where with Joseph that he didn't know the people there.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't comfortable with the people at the party. We went to quite a few events where there were, you know, there were hundreds of people that were at Wesley, but he seemed to know them all well, and he seemed to talk to them quite well, quite affectionately, quite, you know, mm-hmm. almost normal, and had
yeah.
normal conversations with them, and they got along well. And my relatives, which we have, you know, family get-togethers quite often, he does well speaking to them. You know, I can imagine, and I know I've heard he tried to go to different events where he is in a law school, and nobody, he doesn't, the people in law school, which is an unusual law school, a lot of the people are older, and they have a wife, and they have kids, and it's been hard socially again for him in law school because most of the people do have wives and children, and they have their own cliques that they're with. So I think my wife has had to bridge the gap for him socially the last couple of years, and Skype has bridged the gap, and they've kept some of his old friendships alive, because in college it's been pretty lonely, and he
mm-hmm.
encountered a lot of social problems, in law school because of that. But the good thing about law school is that, you know, he's there to learn the law, and he seems to enjoy learning the law. And he seems
mm-hmm.
to be good at it. He seems to be very good at it. And, I would say that watching him each day read the law, discuss the law with my wife, and talk about projects he's doing in class, I think he's going to be a great lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
And the main reason he went to law school is that he wanted to help people with disabilities like himself. He wanted
mm-hmm.
to try to make the life better for those people. And
mm-hmm.
so I guess I feel differently. He wants to, you know, he does go to certain events where he tries to be social and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess I feel that maybe it's good that he's sacrificing a few years now so he can,
yeah.
you know, help people in the future.
Okay. I'm Nick Peters, and this is the Deeper Waters podcast. We're going to take another break, and we'll be back. And when we come back, I'd like to talk about Joseph today. So we will be back after this break.
Check out CYIWorldwide.com. CYIWorldwide.com, home of Grok Radio. Free music downloads, advice, prayer, and support. CYIWorldwide.com. Do you grok?
Join Unituber and Army Girl for Christ as they discuss spiritual warfare, spiritual preparedness, the end times, life issues, and personal and spiritual growth. That's www.truthradionet.com. Truthradionet.com.
I am believing.
how it's working on today.
You know, if we're back here with Jacob Alexander, and we're talking about his son Joseph. As we keep talking, I keep having one image going in my mind. It might make some of my listeners relate to. I know that Bekeep Dinama has Asperger's, but and a kind of character that I think kind of shows what it's like would be if any of my listeners watched The Big Bang Theory, just think about Sheldon Cooper, okay? And that's the kind of mindset that you're you know who I'm talking about, right?
Oh, very well. We watch it quite often, and we do think that, you know, Joseph has a lot of similarities to Sheldon Cooper, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah.
They're very similar in a lot of ways. But the thing is that my daughter loves that show. That's her favorite show. And I think it might be because some of the characters, well, first of all, she went to a university, a technical school, and, well, as a matter of fact, I'll write in the book, she works at NASA now. So she went to a technical university, and she watches that show quite often because not only does that character sort of remind her of her brother, it also reminds her of a lot of her friends at the universities she went to and a lot of the people she works with at NASA.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk about Joseph today, Ben. How is he doing today, and what do you think the future holds?
Well, Joseph is in his second year of law school today. Mm-hmm. When he took the very first class, first of all, a lot of people, and I write about this in the book, he went through sort of a jobs crisis. So
yeah.
It was kind of hard to get into law school. People don't realize that there were a lot of people that were trying to get into law school, thousands upon thousands of applications. When Joseph made it into law school, there were 5,000 other people that wanted his position that didn't get in. He made it in to law school, and in his first class, after his first semester was over, he was ranked as the number one student in his class.
Mm-hmm.
Professors that he had at that particular semester thought that, you know, he had a future, and he's extremely bright. And, you know, like I said before, when he writes something, and it's part of the problem with Asperger and the way he is, when he takes on a subject that is in his area of interest, he does it perfectly. And when he writes something, it's almost perfect. I mean, it's flawless.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the professors noticed that, and he really, you know, showed that his first semester. Since then, I mean, it's been up and down. I mean, he's done really well about half the time, and then he's been discouraged, and he's doing well, but he's done well about half the time, and, you know, just made it the other half of the time. Because it's an up and down process, and law school is difficult. And he's competing at the particular school he goes to, a large university. He's competing against some of the, you know, brightest people that he can't compete against.
Mm-hmm. Should everything go according to plan, when is Joseph expected to get his degree, and what degree will it be?
Well, he's going to get a Juris Doctor in law, so, I mean, it'll basically be a doctorate degree, and I think he's, at this point, he's going to take a summer course. He's going to graduate on schedule. He will graduate. He's in his second year now. So when would you say he's going to graduate? Would you comment on that? My wife's been worried. He would graduate not this December, but the next December. So actually about a year and a half now, if everything goes according to schedule.
And if she wants to...
He completed about a year and a half of law school.
And if your wife ever wants to say anything directly on the air, she's more than welcome to.
She says no.
Okay. Okay. So, what's Joseph's plan, then, once he graduates?
His plan once he graduates is to, he wants to defend people like himself with disabilities.
Mm-hmm.
He wants to help people who need help legally with disabilities. And what's interesting about it is my wife, myself, and Joseph, we took time to go to the courthouse in Atlanta, in our county in which we live, and to watch, to see what was going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a line, and I'm very sincere about this. The line was probably a quarter of a mile long with cases of a matter of all different types of cases. I mean, cases that were just minor offenses. I mean, and a lot of these people were, you know, had mental conditions, and that was part of the reason they were in the justice system.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not believe, and we sat there and listened to cases for 4 or 5 hours, case after case after case. And in myself, I come from a small southern town. It's kind of like Mayberry. And these are the type of cases that, say, Andy would have just said, well, you know, have the guy go rake the yard or something, and it's okay. But then they may arrest some guy who's, like, mentally ill or something, and they put him in prison for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And ridiculous cases. And there were hundreds of them. And it seemed to never stop. And that is really when I, you know, got aggressively thinking about this book more and more and more, and thinking about Joseph's life, and he started thinking about what he was doing, and that's when I started aggressively wanting to get this book finished and talk about his life experience after going to the courthouse and listening to all these stories of all these people, thinking about all these petty crimes and all these people going to prison. Mainly because it seemed to me quite a few of them were just, you know, they had mental issues, and they were minor mental issues, and so many people like that need an advocate in the justice system. And you know, Joseph, I've always thought he was the most logical person I've ever met. I mean, it's like And I said this, at times you would think he's the dumbest person in the world, and then at times you listen to him explain a point, and it's like you're talking to Einstein. He is so logically gifted. And I just think that he could help people like that. And I think he feels that with all his heart, too.
Mm-hmm. So
that is what he's about. He wants his ministry to be helping disabled people in the legal system, in the justice system.
Okay, does he plan on joining another firm or starting his own firm, or what exactly?
Well, he's got an attorney in Atlanta that he's working with now, a disability attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And one reason he picked the university that he's going to in the West is that it was ranked as one of the top universities in the United States in disability law. So he's going to a school that, and he picked, and I write in the book that he went through a long process to find the right law school and to, you know, to get the best education he could to help disabled people. So he's going to university, and she's basically going to study disability law. He's working with a lawyer right now in Atlanta in a firm, sort of doing, he plans to do an internship with that lawyer during the summertime, and hope maybe to join that firm.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, things are in the air, and it's kind of open right now as to what he'll do. He wants to join, you know, a disability law firm and work and, you know, work with that firm for a few years before he would decide to go out on his own or anything.
Yeah, we just had a Social Security hearing here for my wife with bad disability. Is Joseph going to be doing that kind of work as well? Is it just going to be criminal law, or is it going to be all cases disabled?
All cases. He would do any type of case like that. He would be in that area. It would be, you know, whatever type, his law degree. You know, he's studying lots of different types of law. His undergraduate degree is in finance, so he's also got a background in that area. And he did quite well in the area of finance in school, so he has a good understanding of that.
Mm-hmm. Now, does he by any chance have some like a website set up for him so that if someone maybe listening might say down the road, hey, you know, I'd really like someone like that to argue a case for me or for my child who's disabled. Does he have that, or is he planning on starting it if he doesn't?
He may start that. Right now, it's all he can do each day to read what he has to read for his classes and prepare for the class. He really has not got involved in anything like that to this point. But he's just really trying to make it through law school at this point. And for him, it's an upward battle, and he's working as hard as he can every day to do as well as he can in law school. He's not even thought about that. He basically just tries to go to church each week and talk to the people in church. And people would not, for the most part, he doesn't advertise that he's disabled in any way. And a lot of people may not even notice it. Matter of fact, most people wouldn't notice it, I think.
Yeah, but you've said it's an upwards battle every day, so he's still dealing every day with a lot of effects of the Asperger's. Could you, if that's the case, could you tell us an example of what he's dealing with today?
Well, I think his biggest problem every day is that the competition is so difficult. He's dealing with other people that have such bright minds that you're going up against. You know, the competition and the enormity of all he has to do, all the writing, all the reading, it washes over him, and it's very difficult. And I think each day my wife has to give him about a 30-minute pep talk to get him started. She has to prime him almost every day to convince him he can do it. And when he gets convinced he can do it, he really can do it. I mean, like I say, when he started out, he was competing against some of the best minds, and he was number one. So, I mean, he really does have an amazing ability, but there's still doubt. And I think if a normal person was in law school, first of all, I couldn't even make it in law school where he is. I mean, I tried to take the test, the testing, some of the testing. I took some of the practice testing that he did, and I scored 50th of the score that he scored. I couldn't even make it into school where he is to begin with. And it's just an enormous process, and it would be an enormous process for a normal person. And it's difficult for him, and I think, he has had problems with his self-concept and everything. And he has to pray a lot each day. They spend probably 45 minutes or an hour a day every day studying the Bible and discussing, how the Bible relates to what he's doing in law school. And he spends a lot of time in thinking about the Bible and reflection, and it helps him continue on and do what he has to do, because he has a lot to do, and it's an enormous undertaking. And I listen to it a lot each day, and believe me, it's something I don't think I could do.
Could you tell us?
And I'm really good socially, and I don't think I could do it.
Could you tell us about some of this thinking that's going on? Because, I mean, he's number one in his class, and that can be verified by anyone.
Let me correct that. He's not number one now. He was number one after the first semester, but he is not number one now. So, I mean, like I say, it's been up and down. He's not the number one student now, but it's been up and down. He's done really well. He's been the top student one semester, and then the next semester, it's been the courses that he didn't do as well in, because it's a different subject in law every semester. And so it's been an up and down process. And he finds areas where he's really good, and then areas where he's just able to get by. But he's still there, and he's still doing well, and we're happy about that. We're ecstatic about that.
Okay, but you get the objective evidence that he's excellent at what he does, but he's still got this subjective experience that tells him that it doesn't seem to be that way in reality. Do you think you could tell us a little bit about what you think's going on and why you think he needs the pep talk and what he needs to be reminded of regularly?
Well, I think what's going on is that, you know, he's dealing with people, quite a few of these people, you know, it took them years to get here. They did the testing and they didn't make it. They flunked. They were
mm-hmm.
denied getting in.
Mm-hmm.
They were there. They may have spent 2 or 3 years trying to get there. And by the time they got there, they decided that they were going to be the best they could. And
mm-hmm.
these people are also bright. So he's in a heavy competition at a top university law school, and it's difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, each day, you know, is more difficult. And some classes require oratory that, you know, you have normal people doing the oratory. They've never been through speech therapy, and they've never been through some of the things he's done. So at times, he doesn't do as well in some of the speaking classes he has to do. And at times, he does extremely well. It depends on
mm-hmm.
the subject. I mean, there's been some subjects, you know, like I say, he's the only one there that has Asperger, where there's times when in a specific class, he's beaten the best of the best in oratory.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's times on other subjects and other courses where, you know, he's been about average for
mm-hmm.
the law school. But average for that law school would be, like, superior for me.
Mm-hmm.
It would be above average, you know, where I'm concerned.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I say, he's doing well.
Yeah.
We're happy with how he's doing. And overall, I think he's doing very well.
Mm-hmm. I'm guessing that with all that's going on, he tends to have the same focus that most of us do, and I don't think it's just an Aspie thing, where he's focusing a lot of times, unfortunately, on the negative aspects, and so he needs to be reminded of the positive aspects. Would you agree with that?
You're right. You say it better than I... You're saying it better than I could. He does
yeah.
focus a lot on the negative, and mm-hmm. it's a very... you know, life is negative. A lot of bad things happen in life.
Yep.
And, you know, there's a lot of negative things in law. When you read these cases where such and such murdered somebody, and such, this was a miscarriage of justice, and on and on and on. Hundreds of cases like that that you have to study in detail when you're in law school. It can put you in a negative frame of mind, and
yeah.
you've had that happen quite often.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, we're going to go and take our last break and come back. We'd like to... I'd like to discuss maybe tips for other parents and such in these kinds of situations. So we'll be right back to discuss it. I'm Nick Peters, and this is the Deeper Waters Podcast.
Join Army Girl for Christ and Minister Grock as they tackle some of today's pressing issues from a Christian point of view on Truth Be Told. Every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. For more information, check out CYIWorldwide.com.
You said you could talk. Do you want to take...
Hey, this is Minister Grock. Thanks for listening. Although Grock Radio is free, there are costs to upkeep the website, podcast, and purchase Bibles and materials for street ministry. And while we are happy to pay this ourselves out of pocket, we will gladly accept any gifts if you feel led to support the shows and our street ministry. You can send a gift or love offering through our website at CYIWorldwide.com. Thanks for your support, and God bless.
I'm Nick Peters here, and we're back at the Deeper Waters Podcast. We've got Jacob Alexander, the author of In the Belly of a Whale, about his son Joseph as Asperger's. Can you tell my listeners right quick, if they want to get a copy of your book, what do they do?
Well, they can go to Amazon.com. The book's available at Amazon.com. They can put in the title of the book, In the Belly of the Whale, and
mm-hmm.
the author is myself, Jacob, J-A-C-O-B, Alexander, A-L-E-X-A-N-D-E-R.
Mm.
They can put in the title and put in the author's name and look the book up. It's at Amazon.com.
Okay.
It's available for download to your iPad or as a copy of the book, and it's very, very inexpensive. It doesn't cost very much. My wife told me to clarify one point, though, I'd like to clarify, and what I was talking about before. And she said that, you know, the biggest problem with Joseph right now is loneliness.
Oh, yeah.
He's very lonely.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he had a situation in college where he had tons of friends.
Mm-hmm.
He developed lots of friendships. Now he's back in a situation where he's lonely. And I think that is his biggest problem.
I think that could be a shocker to many people here. But, yeah, that is something that we struggle with on the spectrum. Because you think, well, you all don't socialize a lot, so maybe you just don't care about people. No, it's not that we don't care about people. So you don't know how to socialize. And you really do want to be with people. You just don't know how to do it. And I can say from my perspective that getting married really changed things a lot for me, because now I'm never really lonely, and always having someone nearby in your life is just such a big thing. But would you agree with what I'd said earlier just
100%.
Now, Pat?
I think that's exactly right. I think you have nailed it. I think he wants friends more than you can imagine, but you know, he's a Christian. He doesn't drink.
Yep.
You're talking about, and there are a few Christians that are in the law class with him, but the majority of people in the class, I mean, they socialize by going out partying, drinking, getting drunk, and that type of stuff, and that just happens to be the way it is. So, I mean, he's got a low pool of potential friends, and unfortunately, a career in law, it takes a lot of time. You spend a lot of time in the law library. You spend a lot of time, you know, going to classes. You spend a lot of time writing and you know, doing law. And, you know, he just hasn't met people who are very many Christian people in the area where he is that are like him, that are very strictly Christian and don't drink and don't do the other type stuff like that. And
if it's any consolation to him, aside from what you find in medicine and such, I've never drank a drop of alcohol, and I'm 32, so he's not the only one. But
well, as far as I know, he hasn't either, so he's like you.
Well, let's talk about parenting here some, because I'm sure there are some people out there who are parents and might be kind of wondering, hey, you know, maybe my kid has Asperger's. If he does, what do we do? I think one of the first things you'd say from your book that you all made a mistake is parents should not play the blame game with each other on whose fault it is the kid has Asperger's. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a good comment. I did write a chapter where I talk about the blame game, and I think my wife and I for years blamed each other about, you know, his condition. And so I think you need to just put that away and forget it and try to move on to something that's productive and improving your life and improving your child's life.
Because
something
it's not
that productively
going to,
improves.
Yeah, because it's not going to change the condition if you know who caused it. It's not going to help at all, so you might as well just deal with what you have.
That's right. You're exactly right.
Okay, now we've got, let's suppose we got a hypothetical parent here, or a pair of parents, we should say, and they're just saying, I think my kid has Asperger's. What should I do?
Well, you should find a reputable doctor who may have some expertise in the area of Asperger.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, go to the doctor and discuss a plan to deal with your son's condition.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you need to do, or consult, you know, someone who's an expert in the area. That's what I would advise, and talk to them about how would be the best management, you know, situation to handle your child.
Okay, now let's suppose we've just found out our kid has Asperger's. What do we do differently in parenting that we wouldn't do with other children? How do you handle a child with Asperger's?
Well, here's what I had to learn, and it was a difficult lesson for me to learn. Patience.
Oh, yeah.
You have to be far more patient I think with a child that has Asperger than you do with a child that doesn't have Asperger. That's the thing I would say is have patience. Don't get too wrapped up in your own identity as a parent, and that your way is the right way, and that it's your way or the highway. And because right in the book, that's how my father was. I mean, what he said went, and we did not defy his word. And if we did, we suffered. Mm-hmm. And you can't be like that with an Asperger kid, because they're not going to change. And there's nothing you can do to make them change. You've got to be more patient, and you've got to figure out a way, a management type tool, to deal that works with the way that their brain works.
Mm-hmm.
The only way you can do that is to read a lot.
Yeah.
About people who are knowledgeable in the area. I mean, read a lot. Read books from people who are knowledgeable in the area, and consult a specialist in that particular area. And I think that's the only way to do it. We were lucky in that, my wife was already basically an expert in special education, and she was not an expert at the time in Asperger. She began to read, and she read hundreds of books about Asperger. And she read all the time, and I think that it was kind of contagious for me. And I was a late bloomer. She already knew the subject very well before I really started studying it. And I wish that I had been a better parent when my child was younger. But instead, I think that I, had too much of an image of myself because of what my parents, how my parents had treated me and what was in my mind.
What you're talking about, though, it raises to my mind another danger that could be done, because, you have to build your life in a different way so that you can raise your child the best that you can, but at the same time, you also have to remember, since you talk about how your marriage is, that your marriage isn't about the child, and the child can't take the central focus. So would you say also that even as a parent of Asperger's, you do have to remember that your spouse is your main priority, and you have to keep honoring that priority above all?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think you're right.
Because
the case in our situation now is that we both want, we think that God is leading our child to, a purpose. We think he has a purpose. And so I think my wife and I are both on board with that, and that is, really good for our relationship. We're on board that, that God is leading him to a special purpose in life. And so we're both on board with that thought, and I think that helps our relationship.
Well, when you talk about having patience of Joseph, though, you can't change it, you said, but, like any other kid, you do have to discipline a kid so they know right from wrong and things like that. So how would you handle Joseph in that area? When he did something wrong, what would you do? And when he did something right, what would you do?
Well, I think that at first I was very strict. I mean, for years I was very strict. And Joseph didn't react very well to it. What we eventually had to do was, if he did something wrong, we would give him time, discuss it with him and tell him it was wrong and why it was wrong, and that we're going to do this type of punishment for whatever he did wrong, and then we would tell him to think about it.
Yeah.
And usually, once he had time to reflect on it and step back, and he became less agitated about it, he was easier to deal with. And like I say, we were lucky in that he was, he was able to depend on the Bible, and depend on what he had read in the Bible and thought about in the Bible. And particularly both of us would, I myself and my wife would read, different parts of the Bible and try to remind him about why his actions is wrong a certain way according to the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
And he, after he had time to reflect on it, a lot of times he usually backed down and accepted the punishment and did what, you know, he was supposed to. Early on, it was a struggle.
Yeah.
It took years for us to learn a management style, how to manage them. And we, it was a lot of trial and error. And mm-hmm. it was rough. I mean, it was, for years, it was a rough life dealing, trying to deal out punishment and figuring out how to, you know, develop a situation that could teach him how to go in the right way.
Well, I'm guessing also some that we've had to deal with, Eddie, as well, that, you know, you tell other parents who have children with Asperger's, is that when they do something wrong, you have to correct it right then and right there. If you put things on hold and you don't get around to it, it's not gonna stick with them. That's where the behavior has to be dealt with immediately. Would you agree with that?
Yes, I agree. I think you're right. I think it has to be dealt with immediately, and but not immediately in that you become, you know, irate or you become out of control and you know, that type of situation. You've got to remain calm and remain in control as a parent and not try to let your anger take control of any situation. Because when you do that, to me, it usually makes the whole situation worse.
Yeah.
You got, like I say, it's patience. You got to learn patience. And let me tell you, patience is hard for anybody to learn.
Yeah.
And that, for me, it took years to learn patience with my son.
Yeah. My wife and I have this saying about Asperger's that when you're with us, you really have to prove yourselves a whole lot. You have to demonstrate that you respect us, even if you disagree with us, that you're going to be looking out for our best interest. But once you do demonstrate to us that you're someone we can trust, and that trust is very hard to give, but once you earn it, we're as loyal as dogs to you. We will crawl through the fire for you. Would you agree with that also?
I think that's brilliant. I think you said it better than I could. I think that's right on. I don't know what other adjective I could say other than you're right.
Well, I do speak from personal experience, after all. And what should this parent do when they find out what their child is interested in?
Well, I think that they should try to, you know, try to help build that interest in the child's mind as much as they can and try to emphasize how important it is. I mean, we were lucky in the fact that my wife and I are Christian and that we both believe in the Bible and we both believe, you know, in the Christian ethic. And that was the one thing that we saw that our son was most interested in. He was most interested in the Bible and the Bible content. And for us, that was a godsend. It's almost like God ordained it to happen for us because that is where the answer was.
Now, from what I remember about the past here in the present day is that when we get interested in something, we do tend to become very obsessive about it. And so I think what you'd tell other people is that even if your child is interested in something, I mean, provided it's nothing immoral or such, even if they're interested in something that you're not that familiar, you're not that crazy about, you should still seek to try to maintain an interest in what they're interested in.
That's true. I think that's important. And like I say, the good thing for us is that, you know, the one keen interest that my son has is the Bible, and we're both interested. My wife and I are both interested in it, and I'm always reading something. When I read the devotionals that I get each day, I read something that's interesting, I send it to my son or I send it to my wife, and well, actually, I usually copy it and send it to both of them, and all three of us will discuss, you know, a certain part of it. Or they'll read something, or I will sit and listen to their Bible study and pick up something with that, because they really have a unique way of communicating through the Bible that it's amazing to look, you know, to listen to. It's amazing to listen to them talk to each other.
Yeah. And from what
I
can say from my experience of why this is so important is because on the spectrum, there's no such thing really as a mild interest in something. There is a huge interest in it, and if you go against that interest, then your kid can end up feeling alienated.
That's true. I agree. And you know, like I said before, when Joseph became interested in any subject, he knew everything about it. He researched. He and I get along well because we both love history. And that's something else. He loves Bible history in particular, but he also likes, you know, other things in history also. And he also likes the Guinness Book of World Records. Things like that, and different types of, and he also likes sports statistics. He can almost memorize sports statistics and things about the Guinness Book of World Records. And I'm the same way. I love sports, and I read about sports all the time, and we talk quite often about sports. And he will bring up, you know, he knows about such and such on a certain football team and why how many yards he scored last year, and he can tell you the exact details of everything like that. And we talk a lot about sports, especially football, and he is a fanatic about basketball too. I'm not as big a basketball sport as he is, and simply now with the the basketball tournaments going on, it's been particularly difficult for him in law school because of the basketball tournament going on. As a matter of fact, I think they're going to play tonight here in Atlanta, and I heard on the radio this morning there's already about 200,000 people here to participate in the events here in Atlanta.
Okay.
I'll move
well,
on.
We've only got a couple minutes left, so before we go, let's say any final word of advice you'd like to give to my listeners out there in talking about Asperger's.
Well, the only thing that I could say for myself is to, like you said, find an interest, find a common interest with your child and try to build that and become part of it, and then be patient. And those are the two things that I would add that are the most important things. And there's no really big secret to it, and pray. Oh, yeah, my wife wanted me to get that in, and I also want to get it in. The most important thing is to pray, and pray a lot.
Yeah.
And they spend many hours a day in prayer and reflection, because that is the most important thing, is to pray.
Okay. And I would also add, love your child as they are.
Yes.
Okay. The book is called In the Belly of a Whale. We've been talking with Jacob Alexander today on the Deeper Waters podcast about his son Joseph. That book can be bought at Amazon, and it's not an expensive book. It's a very good read. And so, Jacob, I'd like to thank you today for taking your time to be our guest on the Deeper Waters podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it.
Next week, we will be discussing with my friend Mike Matsuzewski, and I've probably killed his name here, but we'll be talking about Jehovah's Witnesses next week. So tune in next week to the Deeper Waters podcast. And this is Nick Peters now signing off.
Thank you.